Greetings, welcome to The Dividing Line on a Thursday, yes. My promise is we will be done in an hour. Not 2 hours and 22 minutes or however long it was, but just 1 hour on the program today. Start off with a couple video clips. No, I have not even had the desire, to be honest with you, to even start looking at the vast majority of the stuff that's been posted on YouTube. I commented on Facebook that not even Google itself can withstand the onslaught of videos being posted by each of the Hebrew Israelite groups in regards to yours truly, and they continue doing so. But there does seem to be one commonality for many of these, and that is, I don't know how he's been doing it, but Rich has been actively suppressing the truth on this program. And I don't know how he does it, because I move around so much, but he's using video editing software to remove the horns and pitchfork that is obviously a part of my everyday appearance. And I think that's a pretty good job, because I can even go like this, and you can't see my hands hitting the horns or anything. It's just...
Yeah, but I haven't perfected the beam in and beam out effect.
Wait a minute. Don't ruin it. We're going to get to that. I'll show it a little bit later. It is pretty cool that we are going to show you a new effect that Rich does want to work on, because it would be cool to start the program this way. Maybe the folks at GMS can tell us how they did this.
I'd have to get my hands on some Star Trek sound effects, too.
Well, that we'd probably get sued for copyright infringement on that. But anyway, some of you have already said there's no reason to be dealing with this stuff, because this is, you know, so much of this stuff is just so silly, it's beneath comment. I hear you. Let me point something out. We already know of a number of people who have left the Hebrew Israelite movements simply because someone finally, you saw when Vocab was on, and you know the guest, he said, I'm no expert in these things, and there have been people that have been working this area for a long, long time. It's just that we have a bigger platform, and my only hope is that since we've taken the opportunity to look at some of these things, that's going to help get their information out there. But there have been people faithfully laboring, seeking to do the right thing for a long, long time. God bless them. And I just hope that the fact that we've taken an interest is encouraging to them and useful to them and things like that. But the reality is that there are people who are trapped in these systems. And it's real easy to look at some of the stuff I'm going to show you today and go, oh, you've got to be kidding me. Why waste your time? Well, it's not a waste of time, because we already know of people who finally hearing the message of the gospel, hearing someone who stands up and says, no, that's wrong, here's why it's wrong, they've been freed from these groups. And they're not the big names. A lot of them are women. But aren't they worth the time? Sometimes, I'll be honest, I get a little concerned with some of my Reformed brethren, because unless it's intellectually stimulating on a certain level, then, you know, why bother? And it's sort of the attitude that, how many times in talking to Mormons have we had to go back over James chapter 2, and about the 4,000th time, you get a little tired of it, but you got to realize the whole reason you learned that stuff about James chapter 2 in the first place might be for this very encounter. And there's that thing called patience and stuff like that. And I'm not the most patient man, so I get it. I understand. And it's frustrating to me to hear the stuff that's being said. Do I like having horns painted on my head? No. But it's... I also recognize it's not because these men have any knowledge of who I am or what my life is or anything else. They just, it's, we've challenged their presuppositions in a way they've never been challenged before. So this is the only, since they don't have the truth, the only reaction you can have is to attack the messenger and try to protect your people from the influence of these folks. But what's interesting, I'll show this to you in a second, but what's interesting is so often, unwittingly, they're getting our message out to an audience that we'd never be able to reach. Even they're taking stuff from our programs and presenting it to their people. It's not that their people are watching us. They're just, they're getting the gospel to their own people, and I don't think they realize they're doing it. We'll look at that one in a moment. This first one, I'm just going to play a little brief clip. I started listening to this on the drive back from Colorado, and I was listening to it. I couldn't see it. So once I brought the video up, because it's not good to watch videos while driving. Unless you're in the back seat, but I was alone in the car, so that that wouldn't work either. I was sort of interested in seeing what was going on when I first started listening to this. It gives sort of an insight into, you know, what the people are doing and what it looks like and things like that. So I want to play a little section of this. This is GOCC responding to my pseudo scholarship. And it was I predicted that this was going to happen. I'm not sure if it did on the program, but in my mind, I said, okay, if I've brought up in the debate, we brought up the issue of the Lord's Day, remember? And, of course, I challenged Elder Dacaw, provide some meaningful argumentation of the connection. You know, you keep saying that because the Babylonians did this, then there must be this necessary connection, and that's where Sunday worship came from. And so I'm providing a meaningful explanation as to how Sunday worship arose in the Christian church. You have the resurrection, the first day of the week. You have this strange phrase, Kyrieke Hemera. You have in the book of Revelation, it is Revelation, gentlemen. It's not Revelations. It's one revelation. All through this, it's Revelations 1:10. It's like, stop, listen to me. And I knew, because I had done a Google search, what's out there? Well, I knew that there are a lot of Seventh-day Adventist articles, because they're into the seventh-day Sabbath. I knew that there were a number of articles where they take issue with the understanding of Kyrieke Hemera in Ignatius to the Magnesians as having anything to do with the Lord's Day. Now, it seems pretty clear in light of the use of the term Sabbath and stuff in the context. But I knew those they were out there, and I said, you know, I have a feeling if any response is given, it's not going to be that they're reading Baucom's material that I was referring to in from Sabbath to Lord's Day or anything like that that has to do with the historical stuff. And, you know, doing serious scholarship where you don't have an agenda that you're trying to fill out, but it's like, well, if you take this and you take this and you take this, the best evidence, both from the New Testament and the historical material, is to see it this way. That's not what they're doing. That's not what most Muslim apologists are doing either with the same type of material. So I knew it was out there, and I just predicted. Well, that's what happens here. Is yeah, you just what you've got here. It's very very plain to me. I have taught seminary for many years, and when you have to grade papers, You sort of start recognizing internet scholarship and the sources of things, and it's just painfully obvious that these were not issues that these folks had ever faced before, and what they're trying to do in a way too rushed and hurried way, and for way too small an audience. In other words, the already convinced, trying to keep them convinced, rather than pursuing truth, rather than being willing to be corrected, what you're doing is trying to come up with a Band-Aid to stop the bleeding. And that's what you've got here. And but I just want you to see and listen to just the beginning of this. I'm going to go through to a certain point and then sort of just make one comment, and then we'll look at the second video, and then I've got some other stuff to look at. But here's this is from the two videos there are from two different groups. The first one here is from what has been described to me as the calmest of the groups, and the second one from one of the least calmest of the groups, the GMS groups, the Great Millstone group. But here's GOCC.
The Gabar is going to present the lesson called Defeating the Harlot, the Roman Catholic Church and Her Children. So praise the Most High for that. So without further ado, Elder Gabar.
Okay, now, I guess it's going to be hard for me to just play the whole thing. Defeating, so the video is titled Responding to James White's Pseudo Scholarship, but what's his presentation? Defeating the Roman Catholic Harlot and Her Children. I guess we're the children, even though, again, the idea is make everything black and white, and I guess that's a bad term to use in this context, but make everything Rome versus everybody else. Now, in the process, you give Rome far more credit than she is due by a long, long shot. And I don't know if you know this young gentleman or Elder Gabar or any of these folks, I don't know if they'll take the time to listen to any of this. But gentlemen, evidently, you do not want to have any credibility with anyone outside of your group. I guess it flows to the mindset that, well, they're all a bunch of Edomites, and we don't care what they think anyways. Well, okay, all right. But it is just absurd beyond comment to ignore the reality of the fact that I have stood firmly, conscientiously, confessionally against the Roman Catholic system for decades. Up until just recently, the group that I debated more often than any other was the Roman Catholic Church. It was not until, I think, 2 years ago that I finally did one more debate with Islam than I had done with Roman Catholicism. That's not so much a diminishment of interest in Roman Catholicism as it is it's really hard to find Roman Catholics to debate anymore. You know, we try, but it's tough to do, at least Roman Catholics that are representative of Roman Catholicism. And of course, these days with Pope Francis, the ecumenical movement, a whole nother issue. Anyway, any person who wants to be taken seriously as a person of truth, who's speaking truthfully to issues, has to recognize, I've written three different books specifically on the subject of Roman Catholicism, two others that are directly relevant to that, Scripture Alone and The God Who Justifies, Fatal Flaw, Answers to Catholic Claims, and The Roman Catholic Controversy. Oh, four, Mary, Another Redeemer. Sorry about that. I guess it's not in print, but it's available electronically. What? Oh! That
I don't even need to say it.
Yes, and available on Kindle now. All of those available on Kindle at the Amazon bookstore.
And Justification by Faith is too.
The little one?
Yes.
Oh, okay. All right.
How about that?
Just for years. And in fact, the Roman Catholics themselves, many of them would identify me as just a rabid anti-Catholic. And so for you to come along and identify me with Rome just means that you're not really dealing with the world as it exists. You're dealing with a fantasy world. So is your apologetics? You're going to talk about what apologetics is and what apologia is here in a moment from Peter's writings. Not really exegeting the text, but most people never do. And you're going to say you're going to be the real apologia church by giving an answer. Well, that term assumes the reasonableness, the consistency, the truthfulness of the answer. You're not doing that. You've got to recognize Rome is not the only thing out there. And Rome is a lot different today than Rome was only 100 years ago. If you can't see that, if you can't recognize that, if you can't interact with that truthfully, who are you trying to convince? Who are you trying to convince? There's no power in falsehood. There's no power in this kind of, you know, well, as long as I get everybody excited about it, yell loud enough, that's going to make it true. No, it doesn't. It doesn't. So I just wonder, you know, why you do the things that you do.
All right. Sit down. Let's go to business. You can't be running around attacking my elder. And you think I want to shut down. Dim those lights. This is Jane White, a walking, sleeping giant.
I did? That's interesting. I just sort of thought that, I'm not sure when this was recorded. This would be after the second debate, but you know, I've seen a number of videos where I am now becoming a prophetic fulfillment. they're looking for prophecies of yours truly, in the scriptures, and that this is the great attack of the enemy against the elect of God and all the rest of this stuff. And it's like, look. Guys, Elder Rakah rather condescendingly said things to Vocab Malone in a interview that were just simply ridiculously wrong. And in our conversation, we demonstrated that. In the debate, we once again demonstrated that on a fundamental level of Bible, history, factuality, your system is not capable of really defending itself real well. And if you want to try to find biblical prophecy for that, you know, I can't stop you. But that doesn't mean that the Bible is overly concerned about a small group in the 21st century that has come up with indefensible teachings and that somehow was prophesied in Scripture. It's not. I didn't awake anything. I just simply shone a little light on some darkness. And the response has been pretty amazing.
All right. So what we're going to do, we're going to break down. And we're going to be in the spirit. And we're going to continue the work that the bishops of Asia Minor was holding on, like great men, like Ignatius, Polycarp, and Polycrates. These men were the last pioneers before they got killed, holding on to the traditions of the apostles. Con?
Now, you know, forgive me, but I just, you know, maybe Vocab can help me with this, but were y'all really sitting around translating Ignatius before a few weeks ago? Yeah, you know, because if you were, then there's a bunch of stuff there that y'all don't believe or hadn't really dealt with. The primary reason I brought up Ignatius was his testimony to the deity of Christ. That's what I wanted to debate in regards to Ignatius. You all were the ones that said that the deity of Christ was invented at the Council of Nicaea. You do realize Ignatius is 200 years before that, more than 200 years before that. And yet, if he's one of these great leaders, there isn't any question that Ignatius believed in the full deity of Jesus Christ. So, I find this introduction strange.
Okay, so we're going to let the light come up in a few minutes, and we're going to bring some light to this disinformation that the harlot, the whore, the Roman Catholic Church, okay, is distributing. Okay, so we're going to just kind of set the stage and kind of go back in regards of everything that's been happening in these last days. And we're going to see what these Gentiles are doing, and what they're realizing is that we are waking up. So now what's happening is they're sending people that view us as insignificant in one point, and realize that not only are we gaining members, but they're losing members. Con? Okay. So now they bringing out all the experts and the PhDs and the masters and all of that. But guess what? The Most High has taken the foolish to compound the wise. Con?
Okay.
Okay. All right. In these last days, those are the children of Israel and the Gentiles, which are called by the Most High's names, that are awakened to from their sleep, must be ready for the war of disinformation being transmitted by the harlot, the Roman Catholic Church. Huh? Okay. Now, you may hear a lot of these guys call, I'm an apology radio or apologist Christian. Okay. This is where they'll get this scripture from. Okay.
Now, let me just stop for a moment. I'm not accustomed to the cultural stuff, you know, readers and the come on, and that puts me off. Okay, but we got to realize that's where these folks are coming from. Got to try to get over it, try to ignore it as much as possible. If it puts you off, fine, whatever. But once again, do you notice what's on the screen? It's strong stuff again. And this is the highest level of scholarship, if you're going to call it that, that they have. And I just don't get the feeling that these gentlemen recognize, for example, he's going to tell us what apologia means. But that this is somewhat the danger. I've lamented many times on this program. Remember, I've told you, I know of one seminary that has dropped its Greek requirement for the MDiv to the point where you can take a 13-day Jan term class and fulfill your Greek requirement. Now, you cannot learn a foreign language. You cannot become capable of working with a foreign language in 13 days. Not possible. That is a Greek tools class. And Greek tools are wonderful if you know Greek. My concern is that many people confuse Greek tools with actually dealing with the language. For example, here in 1 Peter 3:15, what's called the lexical form, but the problem is that's not what is actually in 1 Peter 3:15. Pros apologion is an inflective form. Now, would they know why it's inflected? Would they be able to research serious, meaningful lexical sources? Can they read the language well enough to recognize the background of 1 Peter 3:15 and the citation from Isaiah and what's going on before that? And what does it mean to sanctify in your hearts kurion de ton Christon? That's why I have started to speak a lot on 1 Peter 3:15 in basically admitting that for many years as an apologist, I focused upon what Peter wasn't focusing upon, and that there is an attitude in the mind that one must have to be able to fulfill the command of this text. And it is an attitude that I don't believe Hebrew Israelite theology allows you to fulfill. What y'all are missing is that this text identifies the Messiah as Yahweh, not Ahaya, as you want to play with Hebrew words, but as Yahweh. Because that term kurion is the Greek Septuagint's transliteration isn't perfectly accurate, but it's the Greek Septuagint's rendering of the divine name. I first spoke on this at the Wretched conference in Ohio, and I think, wow, I've forgotten what year it was. I was about to say 2008, but that's too far back. A while back. And I've spoken on this a number of times. I think I've gone through it on The Dividing Line in the past. But if you will follow the citations that Peter uses and follow the context from Isaiah 7 all the way through Isaiah 11, then you'll see what the background is here. And what Peter is actually saying is to treat the Christ as Yahweh, to sanctify, consider as holy in your hearts the Messiah as Yahweh. That then becomes the ordering epistemological principle that then allows the believer to honor God and honor what he's done in the incarnation, and hence to be ready to give an answer. But that's only a commandment for the person who at first is doing what so much of the Hebrew Israelite movement denies, and that requires a belief in the full deity of Christ. And the only way to believe in the full deity of Christ is to believe in the doctrine of the Trinity, which you identify as Romish, as we will see here in a moment. All these things, here is, you know, see up on the screen there, Shema Yisrael, Yahweh Eloheinu, Yahweh Echad. Anyway, this is the problem in Strong's exhaustive concordance scholarship. It misses some of the important elements of things. Here we go.
Read that real quick, Malachi. Maccabee, Shalakim.
1 Peter 3:15.
Nice and loud, brother.
But sanctify the Lord God in your hearts.
Come on.
And be ready always to give an answer.
Come on.
To every man that asketh you a reason of the hope that is within you with meekness and fear.
Okay, so the word here, answer, means, in the Greek, means to answer, to plead your cause, to defend your argument, to bring an argument for what you believe in. So that's where the word apologia comes from. Huh? Okay, so we're going to bring to them.
Okay, I was just informed by one of our guests from last week on Twitter that... it says, in case you're wondering why he keeps saying Khan, that's how they pronounce the Hebrew term for yes. So that's where that's coming from. It sounded to me like, come on, because I've heard that one too. But now we know better. Okay, so you'll notice lexicons, Strong's, so on and so forth. That this is, okay, I get it, that's fine. Be nice to go a little bit beyond that.
Or we're going to be the true apology of Christians. Huh? Okay. All right, so let's read that real quick, Brother Maccabees.
Many modern-day Christians today use sources like Ignatius of Antioch, combined with Revelations 1:10, the Lord's Day, as evidence for the Sunday worship argument, because they know they can't find anywhere in the Bible Christ commanded to be worshipped on Sunday. But let's take a more in-depth look into Ignatius of Antioch's writings in Revelations 1:10 to see if this supports Sunday worship.
Okay. Now, who was Antioch? Antioch, he was the bishop of Antioch. I mean, who was Ignatius? Excuse me. He was the bishop of Antioch, the place in which the Christian was called first Christian. The apostle was first called Christian. Huh? Okay, so he's an important guy. And he lived very early on. Okay, 35 to 108 A.D. So this guy was a prominent character or leader in the Christian community, especially in early Christianity. So his writing is extremely important because this is one of the outside sources out of the scriptures that we could find how Christians conduct themselves. Okay, and he was an apostolic father, a student of John the Apostle, the same guy who made the comment, the Lord's Day. So you would think that his writings will be important because to figure out this particular phrase. Con, he was killed on the road to Rome. He was fed by lions or fed into wild beasts. He got eaten alive. So he was considered a martyr. So this man, unto the death, he defended the truth. Con? Okay. Now let's see who.
Now, let me go back here a moment. You'll notice, source, Wikipedia, the free encyclopedia. So, look, okay, but if you guys have been reading all this stuff all this time, don't you think you might have come across, you know, little better sources than Wikipedia? I just don't get the feeling that Elder Gabar here had really known much about Ignatius before last month, before June of 2016. And that's going to come out here in a moment because, you know, I didn't bring him back in here. I don't think I... Well, wait a minute. Yeah, okay, all right. At least I got one of them here. Oops. I took the... I took the Lightfoot edition back into my office. But remember when I introduced Ignatius? We discussed Ignatius even more in depth on the Skype program from Colorado. I mentioned that there are a number of printed editions, versions, translations of the Apostolic Fathers. And I read from my green hardback, which I don't have in here, by J.B. Lightfoot, the great Anglican scholar. I have the five-volume Apostolic Fathers set from Lightfoot. He did a lot of work on it. But I mentioned that there are others. For example, more up-to-date, modern in the sense, the Apostolic Fathers Greek Text and English Translations, edited and revised by Michael W. Holmes. And so you have this, PhD, Princeton Theological Seminary, and you can... You know, when I think this is what I read the Didache from, if I recall correctly. But you know, here is the section, the letter to the Magnesians, and you've got the Greek text and on one page and the English on the other, with some textual footnotes and a few things like that. So it's available in other forms. But listen to the argument that's made here. Not going to go much farther with this, because as soon as I hit this, I was just like, there are other things to listen to, and we moved on from there. But listen to the argument.
Martyr. So this man, unto the death, he defended the truth. Kant? Okay. Now let's see who translated our works. Okay? His name was Joseph B. Lightfoot. Okay? So real quick, read that on top. Brother Mac.
Who translated the letters of Ignatius of Antioch, in particular the letters of Ignatius to the Magnesians, where the controversial quote is found?
Okay, so this guy, clue number one, Trinity College. Okay, so that's a Roman Catholic college, so that's a problem number one.
Now, some of you are going, well, why is that so problematic? Well, if you know anything about Cambridge and Oxford, you know that, well, if you know anything about J.B. Lightfoot, you know that he was an Anglican. He was Bishop of Durham, which is what N.T. Wright has been as well. Trinity College was formed by Henry VIII. Now, if you know a little bit about your history, you know that Henry VIII broke with Buddhism, Hinduism, Mormonism. Oh, that's really... it was Rome! That's right! Henry VIII broke with Rome. And when he was basically as king taking over most of the Roman church properties in his realm, he was convinced by one of his many wives not to simply close down this school, but to combine another a bunch of schools together, and that was the origin of Trinity College at Cambridge, a well-known Protestant, not Roman Catholic. Now, is it because of the way he's dressed? Is it because of the word Trinity? I don't know. But to just simply go, well, the first problem, clearly we can't trust this translation because Trinity College, that's Roman, is just... How do you respond to this kind of stuff? It's literally on the level of space aliens, you know? The Enterprise came back and changed all the records using, you know, it's a slingshot effect, and, you know, if you just hit the warp reverse right at the right time as you're going around the sun, you get to go back, and you can beam people out of, you know, airplanes, and... How do you respond to stuff like this? There's no substance to it. It's just, I'm going to make stuff up and throw it out there, and I'm just going to say it confidently and expect you to believe it. It's difficult to respond to that kind of stuff in any type of intellectual way because there's no intellectual content to it. It just does not show a serious concern about truth. And to criticize J.B. Lightfoot's rendering on the basis of the fact that he went to Trinity College, and that's a Romanist institution, when it was formed by Henry VIII, who rebelled against Rome, not only makes the Roman Catholics chuckle, but it should make everybody chuckle. It's just not worthy of anyone. It's not worthy of a mature, thinking human adult. But it is part of cultic thinking, and that's exactly what you have here. It really, really is. All right, take that down a second. Now, that was the GOCC. The stuff coming out from the other groups, the Sakari and GMS, and you can't even play all of it without getting your video marked explicit. For a couple of minutes, for example, in this video, this next video, there's a F-bomb on the screen. You know, as confused and shallow as GOCC's argumentation is, at least they don't do that. I mean, when you got to give somebody a golf clap for just not swearing at you, it gives you an idea, again, of what we're dealing with here. But this one caught my attention. Like I said, the vast majority of them, I'm sure I could find interesting tidbits if I were to spend, I don't know how long it would take me right now. I don't know how long it would take me to even watch what's currently up there that has appeared. I mean, some of these things are hours long. This one was nice and short. But what caught my attention was two things. One, right at the beginning, somewhat edited, but not edited for content, not edited to really take anything meaningful out, they present a bunch of material directly from the debate. And this is being distributed, this is going to be watched by people who would not have watched the entire debate or would never come onto our channel or whatever. In other words, it's sort of like when Muslim by Choice reposts entire portions of the Dividing Line. We don't mind because he's getting it out to an audience that we'd never get to. So it's sort of like, okay. Especially since what Muslim by Choice does is normally just play 8 minutes of me and then have a minute and a half of scrolling text that's way too fast to read the end of the text anyways. And most people aren't going to take the time to stop and read the rest of the text. So it's just sort of like free advertising. All right, woo, go for it. I'm glad that they're putting this stuff out there, and I'm glad that people are getting to see it and getting to hear it and stuff like that, despite what comes afterwards. So I'm going to start, they took a major section of my presentation of the gospel, and they're getting it out there. But then, once They're done with that. Watch what happens. And if, by the way, I'm going to try to watch the timer, they do use the word that white people can't say, but black people say to each other all the time, okay? If I miss it or something, please forgive me. I'll try to make sure to stop before then and skip over it and all the rest of that stuff. But here is a GMS video. It's called Response GOCC Alpha and Omega Ministry Dabat. D-A-B-A-T-E. Dabati. here we go. Bible as a whole, not just taking portions of it, but the Bible as a whole, is the revelation that the triune God is glorifying himself in the salvation of a particular people, and those people are derived from every tribe, tongue, people, and nation. It is the negation of the work of Jesus Christ. It is the negation of the New Testament to ever say anyone that those people are determined on the basis of skin color, genetics, or anything else, of Jews and Gentiles, of Jews and Gentiles.
All praises, honor, and glory goes to Yahweh, Bahashem, Yahawashah. And that's who the world ignorantly calls God and Jesus. And secondly, I want to give double honors to the apostles and even the elders of Great Millstone, and a sincere salute, salutation.
So you're telling me you can't do that? I mean, you've got all that cool stuff out there.
That's After Effects stuff. This is live show.
I bet you there's some gadget out there somewhere that would, because I, other than the pitchfork thing, I think beaming into the picture would be sort of
well.
Cool.
Beaming in's pretty wild. I can't duplicate that, but we could buy you a pitchfork and some horns.
Well, we haven't gotten the horns yet. They come a few minutes.
Oh, that's
in.
Right. I forgot. It's giving away the ending.
Yeah. Do you sort of like how your microphone is just sort of stuck there, because they can't really get rid of that real well? But and the background could really use some work.
That's straight out of 1998.
I think our website looked like that once.
It did.
Sometime back when it was. Well, Texas327.net or something.
You're waiting for the little lights to start flashing on.
Oh yeah, the HTML flicker. Yeah, that'd be pretty cool. Yeah. Anyway, and 2 Corinthians 2:11. There, it's we are not ignorant of Satan's devices, is what that's all about. And then the music, really. I'm sorry, wasn't
To all you Achaeum laboring around the country and also the globe, because the great Israelite awakening around the globe, okay, is scaring these devils, scaring the pants off these devils, man. And you can't ride, run, and hide, you so-called white man.
Now, no, it's around, it's 4, you're at 3:45, I think. I think I can dump out, don't worry. So-called white man? What? Okay, I got some sun in Colorado, okay? I learned, for example, if you put SPF 50 sunscreen on your arm and then put one of those sunshade sleeves over it, the sunshade sleeve will absorb all of the sunscreen, because when you take it off, I got fried. Okay, so I've got a little melanin going on in my arms, but not my head. I used plenty of sunscreen. So-called white man? I don't know. Have you watched Braveheart? Have you seen my ancestors? They are very white. Very, very so-called white man. You gotta chuckle at some of this stuff.
Going into slavery, you're going into hardcore bondage. No matter how many books you try to cover up, no matter how many pictures you try to cover up, no matter how many books you hide behind and pictures.
So did you hear that? You're going into hardcore slavery. These guys rejoice in this idea that when the black Jesus comes back, they're foot's going to be on our neck, and we're going to be in slavery. And of course, none of these people have ever been in slavery, so they're just wanting to be slave masters themselves. It's like, have you thought through what that really means about your heart and things like that? I mean, really? Have you thought about it? Doesn't seem so. But and then, you know, when he's talking about all these books trying to hide and pictures and stuff, they're talking about like the one woodcut of King James, and you know, it's all the conspiracy stuff. We've changed all of history and hidden the real facts and stuff like that.
Writings, okay, and scrolls. No matter what you do, slavery is coming. Okay, slavery is coming for you, Esau, and you heathen nations that put the children of Israel in slavery, was responsible for it, and mainly you so-called Jews, you fake Jews.
Here it comes.
Okay?
Beaming
this
in
is
now.
2 Corinthians 2:11. Lest Satan should get an advantage of us, for we are not ignorant of his devices, and that's what we're looking at here.
You know, in kindergarten, it was really rough because you'll notice my horns aren't the same color. And so I got a lot of bullying in kindergarten because of my different colored horns. Because all the other little kids had the same color horns.
We're looking at one of Satan's devices, talking about the Bible and how many different translations there are, trying to throw off the prophecies. We know that's what this devil is trying to do. You know, he can't stop it. You can't stop it, Esau. This awakening, this truth, this exposure of you devils. Of course, you're going to have two.
Okay. Whew, I just caught it. All right, hold on a second. Okay, I think we're safe now.
That this so-called theologian had all his answers, all his information on these books. Where was he then when we was all up in those churches, man?
That's what caught my attention, right there. You say you actually listened that far. Yeah, I did. That's what caught my attention. You got all these books. You got all these answers. Where were you when we were up in all these churches? Now, I'm taking that. I'm not taking that in the sense of him saying, well, when we were going into your churches, because they'll go into churches and disrupt services and stuff like the GMS people will, and all that kind of stuff. That's not how I'm understanding it. I interpreted that as before we heard the truth and became Hebrew Israelites, how come you weren't telling the things you're telling now then? And I'm like, I don't know who this is. He never shows his face. But in all probability, my son is older than him. So one of the complaints that some people have, and I take it as a compliment, is I'm talking about the same things now that I was talking about 25, 30 years ago. This ministry's been around over 30 years. And so, coming up, I think, 33. And so, I have been talking about these things. Many others have been talking about this. This information was available, but what struck me was there is, in a sense, and I'm, oh boy, am I going to get in trouble for this. Here we go. In many churches of whatever ethnic mix, there is an anti-intellectualism, an anti-church historyism, there is an anti-theologyism, there is an anti-Bible translation, Bible transmissionism, and it's seen in the fact that it's almost never addressed, almost never talked about. But it's especially true in black churches. It's just a reality. The idea of sound doctrine, church history, there are so few where there is an emphasis. There are, they're out there, thanks be for them, but they will be the first ones to tell you that they are in the minority, and it's a constant battle for them to try to communicate to their people the necessity of knowing these things and getting over all the social, cultural stuff and focusing upon the truth. And cults, it's been said, I don't know who came up with this first. I certainly didn't come up with it. But it's a true statement. Cults are the unpaid debts of the church. When the church will not be balanced, when the church will not do what is necessary to disciple and ground and grow the saints, the cults become the unpaid debt of the church. And when I heard this man saying these things, you know, where were you? Well, I've been around, but I'm nobody. There were lots of people. I haven't said anything that is outrageously unusual or anything like that. I've just simply been responding to some pretty amazingly facile, shallow arguments that really can't stand up to examination. And there are lots of people who could have given you those answers. You're saying, where were they? Well, they were there. Did you go looking for them? Would you have even accepted those answers from someone that looks not like that, since I don't have horns, but looks like me? But there was a implicit statement in those words that really caught my attention. And it's not fair to make the accusation that was made, but at the same time, the cults are the unpaid debt of the church. And if we will not do what's necessary to explain to our people, this is why we're talking about this subject. This is why we need to talk about that. That's why you need to be grounded in this area. Well, you're helping to make those folks cult fodder. And once they're there, they may be very, very, very difficult to reach. So, yeah, that's quite the interesting picture. But like I said, I couldn't even play this whole thing for you because it's just inappropriate. It really is. So, there you go. There's a couple of those. Real quickly, as we only have a few minutes left on the program, just a quick shift. I haven't seen it posted yet. I'll try to post it somewhere. But last evening at PRBC, I have the next couple of weeks preaching, and I'm going to be going through the blessings and cursings section in Deuteronomy 27 and 28. And I don't have time to develop it right now. I will at some point spend enough time on the program that we can at least link folks to it, because I think it's very important, especially dealing with Deuteronomy 28:68 and the central place that has in Hebrew Israelite interpretation. But last evening, on Wednesday evening, this is the week, if you're watching this at a later point, this is the week of the Democratic National Convention. I don't even know what to say concerning the fact that a national, one of the two political parties in our nation, what I have seen this week, what I've heard this week, I really do believe that the appropriate name for this party is the Socialist Party. It is so very plain and so very clear that socialism is obviously a matter of tremendous ignorance amongst the young people in our nation. They don't realize the dangers of socialism and the destructive nature of socialism, especially to personal liberties and freedoms. The rise of totalitarianism, the speed with which it's happening is shocking. I was thinking about that. And last evening, I'm not going to go through the whole thing, don't have time to, but I do want to look and see if we've already posted. If not, I can get it posted. Some comments that I made from Psalm 2, the second psalm. I can't think of another text that is more explicit in revealing God's attitude toward rulers, kings, and judges who purposefully stand against his lordship in the world than the second psalm. That's why it's preached on so often by certain groups that emphasize these things, but it's right there in Scripture. And it's a rich, rich text that I think is very often, I think it has been overlooked in American Christianity, primarily because we have experienced a period of relative peace and acceptance, a blessed period. Now that period has ended, maybe we'll hear it a little bit more clearly and a little bit more forcefully. But what is said there about the kings and the rulers wanting to tear off the fetters and the cords of the rulership of God, and then the judges of the earth, they are warned, kiss the Son, lest his wrath come upon you. I would highly recommend to you, especially given what day it is of the year and this evening, if your heart is troubled within you about what you see going on around you, spend some time in the second psalm. The first one's a good one to read as an introduction, but take some time to meditate. That's a good word. It's a biblical word. Not just read through, but to ponder, to consider, to, in fact, shut off that stupid television and the screens and everything else. Maybe even read it in a book. And just consider what the second psalm is actually saying. And you might actually get to bed this evening with a heart filled with peace, rather than one filled with care and concern and worry. That you might sleep better. I need to do that. I need to do that myself. No two ways about it. So just brief thoughts. I will look right now, see if last evening's devotional has been posted. If it is, I'll link to it as I write up the blog article for the program today. I gave some more thoughts, actually read through the second psalm last evening at PRBC. So just a recommendation to you. I told you we'd be done in 1 hour, and we are done in 1 hour. Thank you for listening to the program today. Lord willing, we'll see you next week here on The Dividing Line. God bless.